97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. This is a show where we talk about the unusual news stories from the past week. Joining me this week are Rich Wareham.
Hello.
And Cara Donnelly.
Hello.
And we're going to start with what I'm terming our economy section. We're not talking about the overall economy, we're just talking about one very specific bit, and that is things being sold.
Oh, see, when you said it like that, I thought you were introducing a section that was almost, but not quite as good as the rest of the section, since it was the economy section.
Also, if you're talking about things being sold, you're not also being told about things being bought, which would therefore be the whole of the economy.
Yeah, okay, it's a subset of the entire economy of the world, involving both buying and selling in a way that such things are wont to do.
Well, all our OCD listeners now are very happy, aren't they?
Well, yes, this one is also a celebrity story, because it's Stephen Fry. He gets everywhere.
And he does. He is the celebrity.
And now he is supporting Cromer's Crabs.
Yeah, so it would appear that there was a very famous Cromer crab processing factory in Cromer, which, due to various commercial pressures, something to do with the international crab markets, I think, is facing closure. And the Keep Cromer's Crab Factory Pressure Group, Open Pressure Group rather, has managed to get a large number of quasi-celebrities to endorse the Cromer Crab Factory. Such great crab experts as Stephen Fry, Alan Titchmarsh, of course, well-known crab enthusiast, Matthew Pinsent, who is a sportsman of some sort, is that right?
Pardon?
Is Matthew Pinsent a sportsman?
Yes, he's an Olympic gold medal rower.
Ah, lovely, right, very good, yes. Well, I suppose it's vaguely crab-related, it's watery, isn't it?
Yeah, and Stephen Fry, obviously, the connection is a surname.
Yes, you fry crabs, and he has Fry as a surname.
I'm not sure about Alan Titchmarsh, though, unless the crabs are very into their... Perhaps only to their water features, even though it was Charlie Dimmock that really did that on Ground Force.
That's true. Alan Titchmarsh's main job on Ground Force was to surprise people, wasn't it? So I suppose crabs do surprise people, particularly if they sort of pinch their toes in rock pools. Or in fact, just jump out under rocks. I've had crabs jump out at me under rocks before. Sometimes not at the seaside.
I like how Stephen Fry has brought this to people's attention. The tweet is, Youngs, who own it, to take Cromer crabs out of Cromer? Question mark. Inconceivable. Well, yes, because if they were taken out of Cromer, then they wouldn't be Cromer crabs. They'd have to find another location starting with C in order to keep that ever so important alliteration.
They could be Corby crabs.
See, the story says that people are dressing up in crab suits to try and raise awareness of this. And what I would like to know is how many people does it take to fill one crab suit? So a horse suit, you require two people.
To be the front and the back, yeah.
So is it in crabs, how many are there and which way are they facing?
Well, the only sort of datum I have on that is the third Star Wars, where it took six people to operate Jabba the Hutt. Now, if we assume that Jabba the Hutt is comparable to a crab...
Jabba the Hutt's surely much more simple than a crab, because it's just...
Oh, you heard it here first. Jabba the Hutt is more simple than a crab.
Strong words, Michael.
No, they are strong words.
It's just a giant slug.
Is that because he's a hut? Is that it?
Is that why he let them get away?
Because he's no more intellectually dominating than a crab.
Is that why he lent money to unreliable investors, such as Han Solo?
Exactly. A crab wouldn't lend money to Han Solo, would it?
My brain has just gone off down the route of Jabba the Hutt caused the global financial crisis.
Well, exactly. He lent money to silly people. Star Wars Episode 1 is a sort of an allegory and microcosm for the entire economic crisis, as far as I can see. Too many Han Solos and too few great Scions. By Scions, I mean like, you know, Luke Skywalker, the last sort of vestige. Well, you know, some people don't know what the word Scion meant. I was talking to someone the other day and they didn't know what the word Scion meant. Actually, they did, but they thought I was talking about a personal organizer device.
I don't know what a Scion is.
This is the last person in a
family. Oh, a Scion.
Yeah, with SC. Yeah, not like the Scion, the electrical device.
I thought you meant as in Cylon.
No, we all know what a Cylon is. In the correct version of Battlestar Galactica, they're big shiny things that have a Knight Rider light on them. In the incorrect one, they're basically Mysterons, as far as I can tell.
So what were
we talking about before I ranted about how rubbish the new Battlestar Galactica
back
is?
Back to the story about the Cromer crabs. One suggestion is that they take this to the EU, and the EU say, yes, Cromer crabs are a protected item. They can only be caught and...
Oh, like champagne and Stilton cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
You can only catch Stilton in Stilton.
You have to wait outside the Stilton caves for 6 months until a Stilton pokes its head out.
Exactly.
You leap on it and you're like, oh no, it's rolling away.
You bait your line with a little small glass of port.
And actually, all the cheese rolling events are actually a recreation of some of the earliest attempts to catch cheese.
Exactly. Well, cheese naturally runs downhill, like many things.
Water
as well.
Gravity runs downhill.
Generally speaking, yes.
Hills, very slowly.
In fact, everything very slowly goes downhill.
Some bits of hill occasionally quite quickly.
That's true. That's when the bit of hill at the back, i.e. the top bit of the hill, gets really bored about the bottom bit of the hill getting to the bottom first and says, no, damn you.
Are you seriously trying to anthropomorphize a hill?
Yes. Well, we were talking about how many people are required to operate a crab earlier on. I don't think it's any more bizarre, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, so another example I have is Melton Mowbray bought pork pies as well, and the Cornish sardine.
I
didn't know there was a Cornish sardine. You can tell I'm reading the story live, can't you?
Can anyone actually remember going, oh, wow, I'm going to have a Cornish sardine? Cornish pasty, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely a thing.
In fact, if you were to do that sort of thing where you try to predict what people are going to say, when they say, I'm going to go and eat a Cornish, the word that you expect to follow is pasty in almost all cases. Sardine is right down on the list, I would say.
I'd say it's higher than pirate bread.
That is true. It's higher than pirate bread, but it's marginal, I would say. And if you're in a particularly piratical mood, you might bump it up.
I think there are several orders of magnitude between pasty and sardine, and another several between sardine and pirate bread.
I agree with your ordering.
Good to know we're all in agreement. If you're in agreement, or not in agreement.
Not in agreement. Or somewhere in between.
If you're ambivalent about the ordering of what might come after the word Cornish.
If you're fuming with ambivalence right now.
Or if you're entirely certain that you have no view,
then you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk. You can go online, www.camfm.co.uk, listen to us on the online player there, and send us a message via the web form. Or you can text studio, followed by your message, to 07786 20 24 30.
You know, you always list those, but you never say, or you could turn on a radio, because you assume that you're doing one of the things. Why do you not tell them the complete list of things that they could do?
I don't know. If you're already on a computer, turning on the radio does not particularly have any extra benefit. Whereas if you're listening on the radio, you can turn on your computer and use the web form on there. And you might want to turn off your radio because you can listen when you're on the web form. You'll be listening.
Moving on.
Talking about the financial crisis, there is a story here which some of the people involved claim has nothing to do with the financial crisis, but I think we'll let you judge for yourself. It's that Belarus Central Bank has been selling off its office furniture all the way down to 480 rubles, which is less than 1 pence, for a single cardboard box.
Now, I saw this story, and one thing that immediately ran through my mind. Now, anyone who's actually worked in an office before realises that there are a large number of people who walk around who don't have any reason to be there, and particularly the people who move furniture around. Now, I've been in an office that's gone through about 3 redecorations in the space of about 2 months, and people are always there moving furniture around. Now, I reckon if you do work in an office, you could probably sell all the office furniture on eBay, and as long as you have enough people that come in and move the furniture around with sufficient gusto, then you can get away with it. You can make literally tens of pounds by selling your office furniture.
One thing I didn't like about this story is the way they kept referring to the rate of inflation in Belarus, because they kept saying inflation is at 40% in Belarus, and so they're selling off all of their non-cash assets to get cash, which, wait.
Is the worst possible thing to get.
Yes. And they're saying they're selling a single cardboard box for less than a penny. In 6 months' time, they're going to want that cardboard box back, and they're going to pay a whole penny. Either The Guardian doesn't understand economics at all, which... yes, possibly. Or Belarus doesn't understand economics at all.
Which, with a 40% inflation, is quite possible.
And it's slightly worrying considering this is their central bank.
Although, it does say selling off the non-cash assets, but it doesn't say they're selling them necessarily for cash. I mean, it does say offered so many rubles and everything. But it may have been something worth that many rubles.
They might be trying... implies money. It's not saying bartering for cardboard boxes.
Well, I would say that selling doesn't necessarily have to involve money.
They might sell and then buy something else with the proceeds, which is like bartering. bartering,
you've
but with
just
an intermediate...
described money.
Yeah.
Well, they're probably using money. But the thing that makes me remind you of is actually, did you see that thing about a guy who started with a red paperclip and sort of exchanged his way up to a house?
Yeah.
So they may be trying to do this on a sort of small scale. So they started with a cardboard box and a few desks, and they've hoped that they're going to get maybe some slightly better desks.
Wait. So a cardboard box and a few desks is the smaller scale version of a paperclip?
When you're a bank, yeah.
I mean, you look at like a paperclip compared to your net potential worth, and then imagine you're a bank and scale it up. I would say like a desk to a bank is a paperclip to a man.
I think that was very impressive that they went as far as the one cardboard box. Most people would just round off at the third desk.
But not them, you know. They help, I mean, presumably the cardboard box is down to like sixth or seventh decimal place in their sort of asset purchasing system.
It's the very worst sort of desk.
That is. That's what they give the new interns. You can turn it upside down to be a seat. You can put it the right way up to be a container. You can turn it halfway to be a sort of desk.
I want to know what people are going to use the 30 paper bags they're selling. It doesn't say whether they're selling them individually or as a job lot.
I like to think that they're selling them with a large number of empty bottles inside to tramps.
Just to like cut out the middleman.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, what middleman are we talking about here? Is there an established sort of trade route that goes from banks to tramps via a middleman?
Would you pay more for a paper bag that was already inflated and ready to be popped, or more for a paper bag that was hygienic?
Well, the thing is, if it's been inflated ready to pop, as Mr. Bean's sketch has taught me, you never know what's going to be in it when you pop it.
There we go. That's your contribution to the financial crisis.
It could be sort of Belarus's answer to Russian roulette, I suppose. It could be a selection of paper bags, and most of them have been inflated with some air and some confetti that will explode in a sort of pleasantly pretty way. But, you know, one of them has got either a small hamster in, or a hand grenade, or some other such thing that you wouldn't necessarily want to pop.
Or crush bonds indicating crushing debt liabilities. You bought the bag and you take the contents.
You popped it, you bought it.
That's just a big sign in all Belarus banks. You pop it, you bought it. Yeah, and on that bombshell.
If you've got any better suggestions for Belarus banks, remember, you can get in touch with us via email, studio@camfm.co.uk, online using the web form on www.camfm.co.uk, or via text message. Start your text message with studio, followed by the message, and send that to 07786 20 24 30. And if you've got a radio, just keep listening.
Your city. Your station. Your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble. That was Cher Lloyd with Swagger Jagger. Sorry, pal, I'll try that again. With Swagger Jagger. We're going on to our education section now. I'm going to start with...
I have to say there to be a jingle there. I don't know if anyone else did that. There was a little pause. I thought, ooh, there's an education jingle.
And then I was reached for what looked like a button.
I thought there was going to be like a whole button I'd suddenly discovered that played an appropriate jingle to whatever section of the show you have to be in. It would be an amazing button.
We could make one. It's like education.
Now mime pressing a button and do that again.
Education.
Magical.
Yeah. You had to be here, listeners, but that was amazing.
Moving on to the actual news stories, this is a study that suggests that IQ might not be as stable as is first thought and might change during teenage years.
Before we talk about this, could someone define for me meaningfully IQ?
The number you get out of an IQ test.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is about it.
That's the definition.
Yeah, it's normalised so that the average is the median. Which is also, I believe, supposed to be the mean, is 100.
If you take enough people's results, then yes.
But,
by the strong law of large numbers.
Rather boringly, they basically skew the distribution so it has zero skew, and then the mean is the median, and then normalise. And they have a normalised standard deviation as well. I can't remember what it is. Anyway.
So we're educational as well, just seeing what IQ is.
Yeah.
But apparently, people used to think that this was stable across a person's life, but now they think around teenage years, it changes.
Which is, you know, not that specially impressive to me. If someone were to come to me and provide me the statement that, in general, kids are stupid and people are less so, I may have issue with the precise way they phrased it, But I wouldn't be surprised that. That's why kids' TV is different to adults' TV.
It's kind of like the stock market, though. IQ stores can go up as well as down, or down as well as up. Sorry.
Exactly, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, the stock market, it can go up as well as down.
Sometimes. That would be a great thing to have in the tiny print at the bottom of the sort of investment things. Well, mind you, I suppose in principle you could sell an investment package based on shorting shares, and so you'd want it to sort of go down as up as well. Anyway, moving back to the point.
Which was IQ scores and their interpretation. So maybe we should move right away from it.
Well, so did everyone assume that there was to be some magic test where no matter how old you were when you sat it, you would get the same score? Because I think that's patently unfair, right? I don't think there's any test beyond sort of, can you put this in your mouth?
Even that at early age.
At early age is pretty hard, right? So basically, unless the test is, are you continuing to breathe, which is sort of a prerequisite for being alive.
And even that for people on respirators.
Exactly. So there's clearly no one test which is going to be the stable across anyone's personal life. So it's clearly unsurprising.
Yeah. Also, the fact that it happens when you're a teenager, also very unsurprising. Like, things change about your body.
That's true. That's true. You know, hair goes in strange places. Your intelligence may go up and down.
Yeah. So basically, we're just
on our FSA posters.
So basically,
we're just strange places, and prices may go down as well as up.
So basically, we're just putting this in the stupid news story box.
Well, it's not such a stupid news story. It's just why I was surprised that anyone thought that it was constant in the first place. So, what actual practical effect is this? Is there a whole group of people who've suddenly gone, well, gosh, golly gosh, I'd been assuming the other opposite and been doing this exceptionally stupid thing all the way through my life?
Weirdly, every time I've taken an IQ test, I've got the same score.
Exactly the same score?
Yeah, actually, exactly the same score.
Well, according to this news story, you have never gone through puberty then.
Quite possible.
Moving on.
Before we start maligning members of
drawing the wrong conclusion.
Before we start maligning
just
me,
just like the news stories,
exactly.
Also maligning me who can't actually speak through a link properly and competently. We are going to move on to which
what?
Yeah, thank you. That's now the mandatory joke over and done with. Which magazine, in fact, who are now going to test value of degrees. So we've gone from one possibly questionable measure to another possibly questionable measure.
So how is it that Which is planning to test the value of degrees?
You know, the irritating thing about this story, before we even get to it, is that this is the second news story I've read today in which another major newspaper has just repeated the findings of what Which magazine is going to do next. The Sunday Times did precisely the same thing earlier today. If I wanted to know what Which magazine was doing, I would buy Which magazine. I would like to remain blissfully ignorant.
Of what Which magazine is doing?
Yeah.
Well, put your fingers in the ears for the next 2 minutes. La, 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 la.
I think we can extend this for longer than 2 minutes and just force Cara to...
to hum away. Isn't this, like, ridiculously annoying to all our listeners who have to listen to her humming? Anyway, the...
Can we stop with the humming, please?
What?
Good.
That's done.
Now, so, the
next story, then.
No. No, basically, what they're saying is people are paying lots for degrees now, so we should run a consumer test on them.
Now, I've only had very small experience of the testing that Which does, but it tends to be seeing if you can browse the web and what quality the photo is. So that appears to be the testing that they'd mostly do. So does this apply to the degrees? I mean, are they going to see whether students can browse the web? And if so, how good the quality of the photos that they take are? Because frankly, I don't really interested in that in terms of degrees.
I changed brand of baked beans that I buy because of Which magazine.
Really? Did they take a particularly good photo?
Yes. It was a very inspiring photo. You could taste the baked beans by looking at the photos in the magazines.
That is pretty impressive, actually.
It was frightening. That's why I don't want to hear about Which magazine anymore.
I'd like that if you could actually just buy a magazine and just experience whatever it was that they were testing. And then it would just save you all the time and bother of actually having to go and test it for yourself.
In the very small, specific way, that's what the Reader's Digest does. Because it takes lots of sort of things that you could read but possibly didn't and puts them together in one magazine for you to read. So that's a small case where that actually happened. I know that's very boring, but
that's,
there we are.
That's a very specific case.
That's a very specific case. You could generalise it into sort of, I don't know, the drinker's digest, where you get a selection of single sachets of various beers delivered through the door. Or maybe the music lover's digest, where you get a CD. Oh, that actually makes a bit of sense, doesn't it?
Some magazines do that.
Now.
There we are. Yeah, we'll get Now magazine. Well, I suppose Now magazine goes well with Which magazine and things like that.
We're just like naming magazines that don't actually have proper names. Like Now, Which,
Then,
This,
That.
This and That magazine would be...
Actually, This and That magazine would be brilliant. You just imagine what it would be. It's going to be full of lavender doilies, in my mind. It's going to be for those women of a certain age who like lavender doilies and this and that and the
Why?
Other.
Why?
I bet it's got a recipe for three different forms of fruitcake in.
Why does this and that conjure that up in your mind?
It's just what I think of when I think of this and that. It's sort of a very old woman thing to say.
I disagree, but...
I just think of bits of string.
Okay, I just thought it would be quite an eclectic mix, but I've obviously been shut down there. Obviously, I don't understand the marketing needed in today's modern age.
So, I see that Which is being backed by the university's minister, David Willetts. I'm not really sure how that helps it. Presumably, Which has managed to survive for 20, 30 odd years without the backing of David Willetts.
Well, it's probably benefited by not having his backing, given his current popularity.
Yeah, lots of people complaining about the tuition fees that are going up to possibly up to £9,000 a year. And yes, they're saying that's why...
Which has been going since 1957, listeners. I'm reading the article right now. 1957. How many years is that? That's many years. That's 50 and a bit. At least 50 and 4. 54. 50, that's the speed of my relative arithmetic going there live on air. 54 years it's been going. That's a long time to be showing how well things browse the web and take photos.
For a long time there, the web didn't exist, so it was just photos.
This actually reminds me of a rant I actually do have about Sunday Times. There was in the Sunday Times magazine, or maybe the Saturday Times magazine, they had a profile of young British software engine, tycoons, I suppose.
Is your argument that you weren't in it?
No. My argument was there was this one particular guy who, I can't even remember his name, but it's something like Matt. It was particularly boring. And he sat there and he was talking about, I was born in 1989, which was the same year the internet was born. Now, there is no datable item in the history of the internet that you can say happened in 1989. And so I have no trust in this man at all. The web was 1991. TCP/IP was 1984. The internet itself came around in the 60s. What is he using? 1989, what is that?
Is that Usenet?
No, Usenet was around way before that. Usenet was like back in the old days of bang paths. I've just shown I'm quite a geek, haven't I? Whoops.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's okay. We're accepting here.
Oh, good. Okay, move on before I moan about Which some more.
Talking about not accepting.
Yeah.
Pupil has been sent home from his school for having too short a haircut.
Yeah, there's a picture of a child looking grumpy in this article, so I assume it's one that's supposed to tug our heartstrings somehow.
But, apparently he had a number 2 on top and 1.5 on the sides, on the clippers. And I don't know what that
means. Nothing to me.
I know. Is there anything in units that we can actually understand? Is there anything with an SI unit or a prefix?
Or even imperial. Is that imperial. 2 inches, 1 inch?
I don't know.
Well, apparently his haircut, the 1.5, was 3 millimetres too short because he was supposed to have a number 2 everywhere, so...
How did he even know this?
So we can work out the difference between a 1.2, 1.5 and a 2 there, can't we?
Yep.
So it's 3 millimetres per 0.5.
Assuming it's linear.
Hoping it's linear. I mean, I assume a 0 would give you...
Baldness. You'd hope so. But anyway, moving on from the sort of metricisation of this. So why was he sent home? Was it some sort of school uniform policy?
Yeah, the school haircut policies are not allowed hair cut that short. Which seems to me an interesting one. Because traditionally you get sent home for having your hair too long, too messy.
I'm surprised that they could tell. I mean, 3 millimetres too short. It strikes me that it's beyond the resolution that a teacher can measure from a distance.
And it's not even all over his head. It's just like a specific bits down the back and side. And so surely when you have your hair cut, the bits on the back and side, like as you go down, they kind of do get Sure, so because of the way that hair cuts.
The way the
works.
Hair works, yes. So it's a strange, I mean, how did they notice it was 3 millimetres too short? I mean, that's quite some sort of noticing, unless they have sort of specially trained sort of hair sniffer dog equivalents. I don't know if there's, well, I suppose animals with really good eyes like hawks, so perhaps they have a hair hawk rather than a sniffer dog. So they have a hair hawk that can tell this sort of thing.
And this guy walks in and
the hawk goes,
launches
exactly.
himself at it.
Launches at this poor boy. And so not only has this boy got to contend with having just had his hair cut, which is, you know, all boys will tell you is a traumatic experience, then have the hair hawk come at him and sit on his head. Then the teachers come, and you can't take the hair hawk's word for it, I suppose. There has to be some sort of evidential proof. So presumably there's like an official hair gauge that you can hold against the hair, sort of this hair, your hair must be this long to ride sort of thing. I mean, this is not the sort of thing you want to happen in registration, is it?
So your hair must be this long to learn.
Exactly. You know, perhaps it's sort of an indicant of how big your brain is or something. I don't know how long your hair is.
Well, if you don't have long enough hair, your brain will freeze.
Oh, yes, exactly. And it'll be a low par. Right, so having determined this poor boy's hair was 3 millimetres too short, the school sent him home. Why is their hair policy so prominently against short hair as well? Long hair I can understand, because the argument was always that basically people play with it instead of do real work.
I think the argument was that they were associating very short hair with yob culture.
Or military really? Culture, because I believe people in the military also have short hair.
This was, in fact, the boy's mum's argument.
Right.
Pointing out there's a guy who won the Victoria Cross who had his hair this short. Which is a wonderful argument. It's kind of like, you know, it can go, just make up, do something, and then go, well, someone who was military had that once.
Yeah, it's basically one notch below the unarguable argument of, but he's got cancer. Right, if you put the sort of notches of arguments you can't argue against, sort of the he's got cancer is like the top sort of, that's where you bring out the big guns when you've got nothing left. Then you've got the sort of, but he's emulating a sort of military hero. Then you've got the sort of like, there's this particular celebrity who's got short hair that's a really good role model.
Like, and there's also one which is the one which is like a really poor excuse, but all of his friends are doing it.
Yeah, that's the poor excuse. And then it goes into the poorer and poorer excuses.
Are we making a scale where like the midpoint is sort of like the dog ate my homework?
Well, the dog fitted my clippers is probably the sort of the calibration of poorness, I think.
I suppose if you just tied the clippers to the hair hawk, then you could victimize students whenever you wanted.
At a distance, because a hair hawk
would fly at them.
Yeah, it's like a hover at sort of 200 or 300 meters, see too short a hair a long way away, dive, clip.
You don't want to clip the too short hair.
Well, what's an anti-clipper then? There must be an anti-clipper.
I think it's glue.
Oh, glue. So the hair hawk has got a large bundle of quasi-human hair and a bundle of glue. Or perhaps there's just a really comedy sort of big pink clown hair wig that the hair hawk just deposits on your head as a punishment.
Oh, there's one key line at the end of this news story that I think you liked.
Well, I can't read it from here, so if you just read it out for me. In perhaps a silly voice.
Would you like the sort of voice of a headmaster?
Yes, a nasal headmaster.
I think you might be better at this than I, Rich.
Okay. The fact that we've managed to get to half term and the only story to appear in the press about the school is the haircut story is a huge relief.
So, in my mind, that conjures the question, what other stories have we missed at this school? How many people have been lacerated by the hair hawk? Is the school actually a school, or is it, say, a fire?
Yeah, did the headmaster sort of go back to the staff room and say, oh, thank goodness they didn't find out about that child we boiled the other day.
Yeah. Boiled child for lunch, everyone.
Yeah. Well, we accidentally gave someone a GCSE that they didn't deserve.
We've had a couple of emails in. One person talking about the change in IQ story. Apparently, your brain gets smaller too when a teenager.
And using the sort of universal law of the internet, as soon as they talked about something related to intelligence, they made a mistake. So they misspelled gets, which is quite impressive.
And they did also point out that's a change in grey to white matter. So does it start off like at the very moment as dark matter? Is that where a lot of the universe is, in little kids' brains, and it changes and goes from dark matter to grey matter to white matter?
So picked up a baby? They're very heavy.
There we are. Most of the unexplained mass of the universe is inside a child's head. Who would have thought it?
And then someone suggested that perhaps Kara only ever took one test, and that was why your IQ was always the same.
Zero would also have given the same answer.
Is that the case?
No, I've taken several IQ tests, and they've all given the same result.
Good. So that's that. We've squashed that That suggestion.
That suggestion, yes.
Good to know that the OCD listeners are out in force, though.
That's nice. I like to think that the OCD listeners out there, because every so often, you know, we give something to them. You know, we sort of elaborate on a point or make ourselves very specific about it. So we're effectively doing a service. So I don't think many other radio stations cater for their OCD listeners. And in fact, actually, to all your OCD listeners out there, I know that it's actually OCPD, because OCD is something different. Because they'll be worrying about that, whereas the OCD people won't.
Okay, I actually have no clue, so I'm going to move on from that and suggest that if you would like to send in your own nitpicky suggestions,
humorous observations for us to read out and take the mick out of.
Nitpicky, or actually go, yes, I agree, because we do that occasionally. We're not
Weird. Well, if you don't misspell gets, then, you know.
Yeah, that would have been a very salient point.
Exactly.
But you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can use our web form, which is on our website, unsurprisingly, which is www.camfm.co.uk. Or you can send us a text message. Start your message with studio and send it to 07786 20 2430.
Online 97.2. On air camfm.co.uk. And across Cambridge, your music, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of Bubble on Cam FM with me, Mark Quintario, and my guest, Carl Donnelly.
The pause is part of my name.
My guest, Cara Donnelly.
And there we go again.
Pardon?
And Rich Wareham.
One other person in the studio understands what I just said.
Yep.
Okay.
Moving on.
I'm sorry, I am lost. But never mind. Carrying on. We are going to speak about a story which Rich is going to read, because it's a difficult story to read.
This is our Welsh section.
Yeah, so Prynhawn Da to any Welsh listeners out there. And can you believe the funeral in Publicum the other day? That was ridiculous. Anyway, so this is a story about the So you know how Monopoly has got sort of localised version? Well, there's an Anglesey version of the game that's been released. And one of the stations is, and here we go, trying to read it, Llanfair Pwylich Chwyngilich Gogar Uch Wynchwndrob Chwylich Antisilio Gogogoch, I think, is pretty much a go. I apologise for getting it wrong a bit in the middle there. So anyway, they've got this on the place that, is it King's Cross is on the normal board? Anyway.
Yeah, I believe it's King's Cross, yeah.
And now, this is obviously quite, they're claiming that this was some achievement to have actually fitted this onto the board, which, as anyone who's ever written a document that's got a page limit before, the sort of concept of repeatedly reducing the font size until it fits onto a page is not an achievement in and of itself. It's in fact sort of a vital life skill that you learn. But this is not only been fit on one square once, but because this is a bilingual Monopoly game, it's been put on the same square twice. Now, Llanfair PG, as it's called in short, is actually the same in Welsh and English. So they've written the same 58 character long place name on the square twice for no readily apparent reason. And that's the story. Can you believe it? Monopoly saw fit to make a press release about the fact it's managed to put 58 characters twice onto one square.
I think it's a bit bad of them to say this was one of our biggest challenges, because when that's one of your biggest challenges,
well, I don't know, they've been riding the Monopoly wave for what, 90 years? They haven't changed the shape of the board. All they've done is rename the things.
Have you not seen the one with the round board?
No.
There's one with the round board.
I refuse to believe you.
Is there anything fundamentally different about the board, or have they just taken something that's a ring in a square shape and made it a ring in a ring shape?
Like, if it were donut shape, I might be slightly impressed. Or two disconnected boards. That would also be significantly different from a square.
Actually, Monopoly 3D would be awesome. Can you imagine that?
What? How would you play that? Is this what people play in the future in space? Like, there's 3D chess in the Star Trek universe. Would there also be 3D Monopoly?
So instead of going Star Wars universe, which reflects the general malaise contained therein.
So instead of sort of going forward, you could also go up at any point.
Yeah, perhaps it's kind of like the all those air things in the third movie, the kind of air cities.
Oh, they float up, yeah.
They float.
Exactly, they'd be multi-level.
See, the last game of Monopoly I played, I arrived late, and I actually didn't get a counter. But due to derivative trading, you don't actually need a counter to play Monopoly anymore. You can just bet on the outcome of other trades and work your way up in that market. It actually makes the game a lot faster because it increases liquidity.
And a lot more dynamic as well.
Mm.
I've never played with these rules.
Really? Oh, well, you know, these are just the common house rules. You know, on the back of Monopoly, it's got the common house rules, like putting the money on free parking when there's a fine. You know, using derivatives and more exciting macroeconomic tools is pretty much house rule number three, I think.
It's, yeah, any two players may form a contract between them with any given terms.
And there you go. And some people do sort of automated trading on Monopoly as well. They just have two computers sitting there playing Monopoly. It's quite an exciting system, although it's nobody's ever quite sure who wins. Most of the time, that's because the bank decides to print its own money at some point as well.
Perhaps it's like global nuclear war. Nobody wins, everyone just loses.
I think if you've avoided playing Monopoly manually, you've probably won in some sense.
I suppose that's probably true. So, actually, the 3D Monopoly would be useful if they were making an Edinburgh version of it, because Edinburgh is the world's most 3D city, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very impressive. You walk down some streets, and then a minute later, you realise you're walking underneath where you just walked.
Exactly, and at no point have you moved left or right. It's not only is it 3D, it also slightly bends the laws of geometry.
Cambridge,
see, that shape
does.
Board I would be excited by. A Monopoly board which bent the laws of geometry would be actively exciting.
Yeah. Rather than just passively exciting, as it would be.
You look at it and you're like, I'm slightly more able to be excited now. That's passively exciting.
Do we know what other train stations on the board, apart from Clonfair PG?
No, I didn't realise Anglesey was actually big enough to have four.
Or maybe the other ones are bus stations or...
Possibly, who knows?
Taxi ranks.
You might have Clonfair, no, that's sort of near Anglesey, isn't it?
It's someone that you have to change on to actually get to this, I believe, but... There we go, offering you useful travel information.
Yeah, for those of you who want to get to North Wales.
And who want to go and visit the royal couple on Anglesey, which I'm not sure if our listeners are into the royals, but we've mentioned them in various news stories.
Oh, yes, isn't it? The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge live over there, don't they?
That's the whole point of this Anglesey Monopoly, why it's come
what?
Out.
What, really?
Oh.
Is that it's not made for local Anglesey residents, then?
Well, they are local Anglesey residents.
No, what I mean is it's not for the sort of the massive pent-up monopoly demand in the Isle of Anglesey itself. Yeah. It's actually for the people who want to, in some way, have a monopoly game that is very, very loosely related to the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge.
Yes.
Right.
As Why opposed to getting...
A Buckingham Palace version of Monopoly.
Or a Cambridge version of Monopoly. That one already exists.
Or a Monopoly board version of Monopoly. All of the different games owned by Parker Brothers.
All the different versions of Monopoly, even. You don't even need to go further than that. You could just, like, stack them up. And obviously Mayfair would be the original Monopoly, because that's definitely the best.
Nah, now, do you know what city the original Monopoly was in?
I assume it was London.
No,
it's an American game.
London is the original, but I know it's not. It's an American one.
I think it's Chicago, although all of our listeners to Wikipedia right now are furiously typing it in so they can show I'm wrong. Yeah. In fact, if I am wrong, do email in, because I think it was Chicago, but I can't quite remember.
But moving on to things being right or wrong on the internet, a mysterious unnamed actress, is suing Amazon for more than $1 million because her age was posted on its internet movie database. Because she claims the website misused her legal date of birth when she signed up to the IMDb Pro service.
See, a lot of people don't actually see any problem with being like, oh, I have a piece of information in one of my databases. I guess I'll put it in another one of my databases, which has a completely different function. Have you seen also Europe versus Facebook?
This is like some sort of...
You mean they're sort of the pop group that sang the final countdown? Or do you mean actually sort of the political entity of Europe itself?
I'm
genuinely asking a question. I just want to...
There's some student in Ireland who is using EU law under similar to the Data Protection Act to demand that Facebook release all information it contains about him to him, including anyone, for example, he's invited to Facebook, anything he's liked within the last 10 years... I really think people are finally waking up to the terrible danger we're in from the machines.
So the nice thing about Google Plus, actually, if I can add a bit of balance,
I think we're going to go like wandering off into social networking, which isn't really what...
So Google Plus, very relevant.
Like. Google Plus lets you do that already. You can download everything you ever plus wand, which, being the fact that no one in the world uses Google Plus, is probably quite a small amount of things.
But going back to IMDb, apparently... Hollywood has defined over the hill as approaching 40.
Which is interesting, because that's not even a line. That's a direction. And everyone is approaching 40.
Yeah, just on different distances.
Well, everyone under 40 is approaching 40, I should say. Everyone over 40 is sort of retreating from 40.
I don't think so much as retreating from 40 as just marching on past 40, grand hurrah.
You only do that when you're 40.
With your chest held high and saying, I don't care about being allegedly old.
Yeah. I should point out that the average age in here is much lower than 40. Just that full disclosure.
As is the median age and quite possibly the modal age.
We are all approaching 40.
Yes, we are all on the way to that.
We're all over the hill in Hollywood terms.
Well, none of us have a Hollywood career anymore, so I think that's an entirely consistent statement.
That's true. We're all approaching 40. None of us can get jobs in big films.
No.
The actress is called Jane Doe, I believe, in the sort of the great tradition of anonymous court cases in America.
Yes. So, if you've got any comments about any of the stories that we've just covered, if you would like to correct Rich's assumption as to what the as to what the correct original Monopoly board city was, please get in touch. Email studio@camfm.co.uk. Use our web form at www.camfm.co.uk, or you can send a text. Start your text with studio, followed by your message. Send it to 07786 20 2430.
Online,
camfm.co.uk,
on air,
97.2,
and across Cambridge, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of Bubble. We've just got time for a few more stories before the next show, The Science of Fiction with Andy Holding. And we are going to talk about the internet some more, because we like the internet.
Yes, or more specifically the web, and more specifically social networking sites on the web, and more specifically Facebook.
Isn't that what the internet means?
The internet is not the same as Facebook. I will inform everyone under the age of 20 for you.
Right, but basically, brain scans apparently show a direct link between the number of Facebook friends a person has and the size of certain parts of their brain.
I like to think it's the size of the idiot centre.
But that's all it shows. It tells you nothing other than that. That is basically this entire news story.
Repeat after me. Correlation does not equal causation. Correlation does not equal causation.
Does it even say what part of the brain is? It just says a certain part.
One of them was the amygdala, I believe.
It was the part linked to emotion, understanding, and autism.
So I assume it's like linked in one direction
well
with emotion.
Well, I'm really hedged there.
I'm assuming that like emotional understanding is like one direction and autism is the opposite direction.
The further left it is, the more likely you are to be autistic.
I also think there's probably a correlation with Facebook friends and age. The younger you are, I say, the more likely you are to have an ungodly number of Facebook friends. And the older you are, the more likely you are to have a sensible number. So there's actually a correlation with age as well.
I'm still confused. I thought you load up your Google and then it opens Facebook for you.
That's right. You load up your Google, you load up Facebook, and then I punch you in the face.
Wow, violence this early in the evening.
Well, I am the author of the punch in the face utility. I mean, everyone should download this. It's the magic button where you press it and whoever you're talking to on the internet gets punched in the face.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that, yeah.
But
if you're using an iPhone, you're repeatedly being punched in the face anyway.
But I like the fact that they're very much at the end of this story just going, this study cannot tell us whether using the internet is good or bad for our brains. How do you even define good or bad for brains?
I guess if you're happier, if you're richer, it's a stupid story. Why don't we talk about Dennis Ritchie?
Exactly.
Dennis Ritchie is dead.
And which is far more important. He did a lot more for the world than Steve Jobs ever did.
Elucidate.
Well, so Dennis Ritchie invented everything that Steve Jobs claims to have invented runs on.
So without Dennis Ritchie, Quake could not have been written.
The iPhone would not run. The software which he used to write programs for the iPhone wouldn't exist.
Dogs would not run.
The World Wide Web wouldn't exist because the software that the World Wide Web runs on was written by Dennis Ritchie. The internet wouldn't exist. Everyone's phone wouldn't exist.
So we couldn't Google. We couldn't Google our Facebooks.
I think the reason that this has been kept so quiet is that actually people are really terrified that someone who dislikes all of these things will at some point stumble onto a time machine and will then actually try and go back in time
to kill Dennis Ritchie. Yes, you see, that would actually destroy the modern world. Killing Steve Jobs would just mean that we'd have fewer shiny mobile phones around.
There you go. And we've got time for a couple of other stories.
George Clooney is apparently not going to run for US political office.
Fine.
The headline is actually office.
Oh, that's true. He won't run for office. So perhaps he's happy to get there at a leisurely place. Presumably he's got his desk at his office sitting there waiting. And he doesn't really care when he gets there, so he's going to have a little amble. Or perhaps he's not going to attempt to put himself in the standing for the lead role in the US version of The Office, or many of those things. But anyway, this is a non-story because I'm also not going to run for US political office.
Heard it here first.
I expect to have the BBC headline story relatively soon about that.
Dennis Ritchie isn't going to run for office either.
You also heard that here first, and
nor
probably
is Ken Thompson, who did a similarly important set of things.
Nor is Superman.
Or Clark Kent, who are totally different people.
Are we just going to go through a list in the few seconds we've got left?
Of everyone who's not running for US political office, yeah.
I don't think we have time. I'm sorry. Thank you very much, and good night.